Welcome to Risky Business News, a short podcast with news from the cybersecurity world. This is Cătălin Câmpanu and today's show is brought to you by Proofpoint. We're going to start today's show with some new academic research published this week. A team from Princeton University analyzed the password policies on today's top 120 most popular English-speaking websites. The researchers found that even after years of best practices and recommendations from security experts, the vast majority of these websites still had ridiculously bad rules for when users had to create a new account password. The team focused their research on three of the most basic industry best practices for when setting up a new password. This included checking passwords against a list of leaked and easily guessed passwords, providing real-time password strength meters, and not requiring users to use specific character classes in their passwords makeup. But while these sound like simple requirements, the team said that only 15 of the 120 websites they analyzed followed these recommendations. In fact, more than half, 71 out of the 120 websites, did not check passwords at all, allowing 40 of the most common passwords to be used as account credentials. For example, passwords like 123456789. In addition, 23 of the 120 websites also misused password strength meters in the sense of nudging users towards using simpler passwords. The researchers also looked at some of the reasons why, in 2022, so many popular websites still have bad password policies. One of the reasons they put forward was that companies are shifting their attention towards multi-factor authentication, and many websites may not have cared to strengthen their password policies. Another reason was related to auditors, and we quote, "Websites need to pass security audits, and the firms who do these audits, such as Deloitte, recommend or mandate outdated practices," end quote, the researchers said. In other tech news, the Rust Foundation has announced the first ever grants the foundation will be providing to open source developers and programs meant to improve the Rust programming language and its integration with other projects. In total, the foundation dispensed $650,000 to 41 recipients, including for projects for improving the Rust programming language documentation, the crates package repository, and the Rust Windows library, among many others. In other tech news, around 25 Iranian Instagram accounts that shared stories of sexual violence and posted about the Iranian Me Too movement this spring were flooded with subscriptions from bot profiles. The Curium Foundation, which investigated this harassment campaign, believes the attackers were trying to get these accounts banned on Instagram on charges of boosting. Now, in some legal news, a Russian court has fined Google 50 million rubles or $260,000 after the company has refused to store the data of Russian citizens on servers located within the Russian Federation. Companies like Meta and Twitter are facing similar fines. Elsewhere in the US, a new lawsuit filed this week claims that Amazon used audio recorded through the Alexa personal assistant to target users with personalized ads, a practice Amazon has long denied. Also in the US, after Russia's invasion of Ukraine, the US government has pushed new and increased funding to free companies that build VPN software, Reuters reported on Wednesday. Between 2015 and 2021, the free companies, named NLinked, Psyphon, and Lantern, had received around $4.8 million in funding, but since February this year, this sum has increased by almost half to make sure the free companies cope with the rise of new Russian users trying to utilize their service. Reuters reported that after the start of the war, QR codes linking to the free VPN apps have been popping up around Moscow to ensure Russians have access to foreign websites. In other bad news for the Russian government, the French division of the RT Russian news agency lost a lawsuit it filed in France against a security researcher and Atlantic Council senior fellow Jean-Baptiste Jean-Jean Villemer. RT France sued Villemer after the researcher published a 214-page report in 2018 exposing RT's role in Russia's international disinformation, misinformation and propaganda machine. Back in Russia, the TASS news agency reported this week that Russian officials have put forward a bill that would ban the purchase and use of any foreign-made software inside Russia's critical infrastructure following January 1, 2025. Since March this year, the use of foreign software inside Russia's critical sector is only allowed with the specific permission from the Russian government. And since we're talking about critical infrastructure, Yuri Shchihol, head of Ukraine State Service for Special Communications and Information Protection, has accused Russia's state hackers of intentionally targeting non-military and critical infrastructure. We quote, "Just as the Russian army routinely disregards the rules of war, Russian hackers also appear to have no boundaries regarding legitimate targets for cyber attacks. Popular targets have included vital non-military infrastructure such as energy and utilities providers. Hospitals and first responders have been subjected to cyber attacks designed to disrupt the provision of emergency services in the immediate aftermath of airstrikes." End quote. In cybercrime and malware news, US authorities seized this week the website and infrastructure of Airsox, an online service selling access to proxy servers all over the world. Authorities said Airsox had been built on top of a botnet of hacked computers, smartphones, and IoT devices. The botnet, supposedly operated by Russian cybercriminals, had allegedly grown from 325,000 hacked devices in 2017 to millions of devices this year, the DOJ said in a press release on Thursday. In another law enforcement crackdown, Interpol said it detained more than 2,000 suspects as part of an international crackdown against bank scammers, online fraudsters, romance scammers, money launderers, and scammy call center operators. The arrests were part of Operation First Light 2022, and authorities say they also froze more than 4,000 bank accounts and seized more than $50 million worth of stolen funds. In another arrest, Russian officials said they detained a man named Oleg Rusakovich on accusations of hacking into the official portal of the Russian Federal Customs Service, where he modified entries to make sure certain goods pass through customs. In the US, a Florida judge also sentenced this week a 41-year-old man to 9 years in federal prison for hacking into the iCloud accounts of more than 4,700 users, from where he stole sensitive images and then shared and traded the data on AnonIB, a now-defunct website famous for hosting revenge porn. The man, named Hao Kuchi, went on the forum as iCloud Reaper for You, and authorities said he obtained and shared sensitive images for more than 400 victims. On the malware scene, it appears that a new version of the Raccoon Stealer malware, dubbed V2, is now being traded on underground cybercrime forums. This is big news because the malware's creator initially suspended operations in March this year, claiming that a key developer died during Russia's invasion of Ukraine. Despite the shutdown, Raccoon Stealer has remained one of the most popular info stealers distributed in the wild today. Also in a report this week, Akamai detailed PanChan, a new peer-to-peer botnet and SSH worm that emerged in March 2022 and has been actively compromising Linux servers since. The botnet is written in Go and its main purpose appears to be cryptocurrency mining. In other news, security firm Lookout has published a report on Hermit, a piece of enterprise-grade Android spyware that was used to spy on Kazakhstan government officials. The company said the malware was developed by Italian spyware vendor RCS Lab and telecommunications company Tyche Lab, and that previous instances where Hermit was also deployed included Italy and Syria. In another report, researchers from security firm SentinelOne and nonprofit Citizen Lab and Amnesty International told Wire that they found evidence to formally link the Pune Police Department to a case where fake evidence was planted on the laptop of two Indian activists named Rona Wilson and Varvara Rao. Previous reporting on their case found that the evidence that led to their arrest was planted on their devices, but investigators could not identify who planted the evidence. The two activists, along with 16 other suspects, are still on trial in India. In other news, security firm Volexity said in a report on Wednesday that it spotted a new Chinese APT using a zero-day in the Sophos XG firewall earlier this year in March. Named Drifting Cloud, this threat actor used the Sophos XG zero-day to install web shells on the firewall, create VPN accounts for future access, and then proceeded to intercept and tamper with DNS traffic in order to redirect the victim organization's employees to malicious servers. These servers performed man-in-the-middle attacks and collected credentials and authentication cookies for other internal apps, helping the attackers escalate their access to other internal company resources. From the world of vulnerabilities and bug bounty platforms, we have news that security researchers from Halborn discovered a vulnerability affecting many major cryptocurrency wallets. Named Demonic, The vulnerability takes place in situations where certain cryptocurrency wallet browser extensions accidentally store the wallet owner's secret recovery phrase on disk in plain text, allowing attackers to recover it in situations where they have access to the victim's device. Impacted wallets include MetaMask, Brave, Phantom, and XDefi, among others. The vulnerability is tracked as CVE-2022-32969, and all the wallet makers have released fixes according to the researchers. And last but not least, Microsoft has denied the rumors that the June 2022 Patch Tuesday was the last security updates the company would be providing to its Windows users after someone started a stupid rumor online. This concludes the news section of our podcast, and now we'll hear from our sponsor. Sherrod DeGrippo, Proofpoint's Vice President of Threat Research and Detection, is now here to talk about some of the recent trends in email attacks, such as threat actors moving away from malicious macros.
Something interesting to the landscape, we have seen a decrease in macro use for about the past couple months, beginning in January for sure, but over the past couple months, threat actors are moving away from malicious macros. Never thought I would see the day, but what they're moving to is increase in malicious ISOs and malicious LNK files. So they're still distributing malware. It's just that VBA and XL4 macros have gone down in volume a little bit, and they're making up the gap with ISOs and LNKs.
In addition, Ms. DeGrippo also touched on the recent attacks using the Folina Office Zero Day.
Last week also saw the entry of CVE-2022-30190, also known as Folina, named after an Italian city and its postal code. We are seeing that in the wild. We also, of course, mentioned that we had seen that used by an APT actor. And of course, as always, the crimeware actors were directly following right on those coattails. So we've seen quite a bit of activity for that. And a patch was released by Microsoft. We'll see how effective that is over the coming weeks. We've seen campaigns of thousands and thousands of messages on some days leveraging that vulnerability, specifically by TA577. Typically, they do QBot. They have a lot of ties to ransomware. They've gotten into the Folina game, and we'll see how successful they are leveraging that vulnerability as the patch is starting to get rolled out to organizations.
And since we're on the topic of QBot subgroups, Ms. DeGrippo has some interesting insights on how one particular subgroup likes to name their spam botnets.
One final quick note about TA570, one of our QBot threat actors. I just want to assure everyone who's been tracking that botnet, one of them, they are named after former presidents, so and current President Biden. We've got Obama, Biden, and Clinton so far over the past couple of years. Just want to let everyone know that the Obama botnets are still going strong and distributing QBot. We see an Obama QBot botnet just about every day for the past couple of days and every week or so, going back several months. So that actor TA570 is still leveraging Obama's name for that botnet.
This is it for today's show. You can subscribe to this podcast by going to risky.biz and to our newsletter by going to riskybiznews.substack.com.